Hi there, my name's Aiden, and welcome back to the Skyfall F1 podcast. You're listening to the Chinese Grand Prix recap, and was I the only one that was pretty disappointed by this weekend? I mean, watching both races, it was just borderline sleep-inducing, and yes, that wasn't helped by the fact that it was 3 in the morning at race start. Honestly, it was just painful watching some of these races, watching drivers get close enough to maybe look like they could overtake, but ultimately struggle too much in the dirty air of cars in front of them to really get anything going in terms of overtaking. So just not too much action in either of the races this weekend. Of course, this was the first sprint weekend of the season. I will be covering both the sprint race and the actual Grand Prix on Sunday. But before I get into that, I do want to make note of something. Ferrari fans, I know some of you may be listening. I'm not going to harp too much on your team this week. I already went off at their strategy department and so many things about the team last week. I feel like y'all deserve a break this week. You've been going through enough with what the team's putting you through at the moment. So I'm going to cut y'all some slack and not talk too much about your team this weekend. That may be saved for Japan, depends on how that weekend goes. But without any further ado, let's get into the sprint qualifying breakdown. So yes, there was a free practice session on Friday morning, but there was no pace simulations because it was one free practice session. They were using that to determine whatever setup they were using for the sprint qualifying session. So there's really not that much to break down from that session. I'm going to launch right into the sprint qualifying session, and the first thing that I want to talk about is Liam Lawson being out in SQ1. This is just disappointing. Qualified P20 in SQ1, and spoiler alert, he will do the exact same thing in Grand Prix qualifying Saturday afternoon. It's just painful for him. When you watch this Red Bull car, it's just so unstable through every single corner, and he clearly just can't put up with that right now, which I don't blame him. He's been driving an F1 for a quarter of a season. We shouldn't expect him to be able to handle a car that looks like this when it's on track. I mean, it's just appalling how bad this car looks to handle. And honestly, what is the true pace of the Red Bull this year? How much is Max Verstappen affecting it where we're seeing this team is still in the top four? Are they really in the top four? Have they fallen far enough that they're a midfield car? It's really hard to tell when you have one driver that's struggling this badly to adjust to the car and one driver that's just flying away in the top five. So, also out in SQ1 this weekend, the two Alpines who joined Lawson thanks to heavy traffic, or so they said, as we'll find out later in the weekend. I don't know that that was really much of an issue, but I digress. The S and Sauber teams both saw their rookies outqualify their veterans, as Ollie Bearman and Gabriel Bortoleto both moved on to SQ2, while Nico Hülkenberg and Esteban Ocon were both eliminated in SQ1. Very strange. I mean, I'll get to this later talking about some of the rookies, but they have shown surprising pace in the qualifying sessions so far this season. It's really promising to see that, especially from the ones that are driving absolute tractors at the back of the field right now. So we head to SQ2, where there is a lot of parity from the teams that moved on. The gaps to the eliminated cars, those being Isaac Hadjar, Gabriel Bortoleto, Carlos Sainz, Oliver Bearman, and Fernando Alonso, were quite large. But only 6 tenths separated the entire top 10, and most of that was the gap from P9 to P10 as Yuki Tsunoda barely snuck in. So 9 total teams put a car into SQ2 and 7 advanced to SQ3. I mean, that is just absolute bliss. We are living through exactly what we hoped we would. Even if the gap at the top isn't what we were looking for, the gap throughout the field is so thin. We saw that last weekend in Australia with Sauber scoring points. We'll see it later this weekend with Haas reeling in some points. Those two looked like the slowest cars by far, and they've already scored points this season. This is exactly what I wanted to see. I can't speak for everybody else, but this is exactly what I wanted. Another important thing from SQ2 was Lance Stroll outqualifying Fernando Alonso as he pulled 0.07 on his teammate. He actually made it into SQ3, finishing 10th in the session, while Alonso finished 11th, so Stroll knocked his teammate out in SQ2. Can't say I was expecting that one, but moving on to SQ3, Lewis Hamilton takes sprint pole. He is 0.18 of a second up on Max Verstappen, and you may ask, what in the world happened to the McLarens? Lando Norris topped SQ2 and finished SQ3 down in P6. He made mistakes on both of his flying laps, and this is one of the reasons I kind of like the way they do sprint qualifying sessions, where they're very short. And if you want to get 2 flying laps in, you basically have to do fast, cool, fast. You don't have much time to go back into the garage, look at the data from the first flying lap, and get back out there and do another one. You have to go pretty much bang, bang. And that makes it hard for some of these drivers, but it really brings out the best in the ones who truly should be shining at the top, like Hamilton, like Verstappen. These are the most experienced drivers. They both just proved it by putting it on the front row for the sprint. So behind those guys, Yuki Tsunoda was the best of the rest for the second time in two qualifying sessions. Alex Albon was right behind him with, as I said earlier, Lance Stroll making up 10th in Q3. So now we head to the actual sprint race itself, and Hamilton led from lights to flag to back his and Ferrari's first ever sprint victory. He was never under any pressure. Verstappen's tires fell away as soon as he thought about getting into the dirty air of Hamilton, and they just fell away so fast he had no chance to make a challenge, and actually ended up losing out to Piastri over the course of the race because his tires fell off that quickly. Oscar Piastri, as I said, finished P2, and his teammate was nowhere to be found. Lando lost out off the line, dropped three spots all the way to P9, and surely he's going to make up some spots facing off against the midfield cars, but he didn't. Instead, he sat behind Stroll for the majority of the race, which props to Stroll for holding him there, but what are we doing here? You had the fastest car on the grid. Go get points. How are you barely scraping a point in P8 in the sprint when you started sick, surrounded by slower cars? I just don't understand what was going on with Norris on Saturday. And this is what's concerning. This is the concern we saw last year. I thought we may not have to worry about it this year because he looked so calm, so composed in Australia. But now it looks like old Lando Norris is back. And this is definitely throwing that title race into jeopardy. I'm not going to talk about that too much today since I covered that a lot last weekend. But I do think the title race is very, very much so up for grabs because Oscar struggled in the first weekend. He's trying to bounce back from that still. Although he does a pretty bang up job of it, as we'll see later in the weekend. But Lando Norris just is he championship material? We still don't know. It's hard to tell. Obviously, we've only seen two races this season, but questions have to be raised already. So behind those drivers, or shall I say ahead of Norris, we had Yuki Tsunoda, who grabbed P6. He got Norris and Antonelli off of the line and held off the charging Mercedes behind him for the entirety of the race. What did I tell y'all about having a chip on his shoulder? Yuki Tsunoda is pissed, and he's driving like he's pissed, and I love it. We have never seen this kind of top-end pace come out from Tsunoda before. Obviously, he's proven he's a pretty solid driver in his own right, but he has been flying this season, and it's so fun to watch. That was just an absolute masterclass in how to keep a guy off of your back. Antonelli was never really able to close up enough to challenge him. He never really had to defend. It was just keeping him in just enough dirty air to hold off Antonelli over the course of the race. And I will chalk that a bit up to Kimi Antonelli. He still needs time to work on his racecraft, as I'll talk about in one of my takeaways, but it's a pretty solid start for him. He's got points in both of his first two races, so I think he's going to be fine over time, just needs a bit more refining. So towards the back of the grid, you had Jack Doohan, who just he was struggling for most of the race, ended up colliding with Gabriel Bortoleto in the closing stages. Is the pressure of Franco Colapinto getting to him already? I mean, I think that's a genuine question that we need to ask. How much is that looming threat of Colapinto affecting him? And how much of a looming threat is it? How much pressure is he under to go perform? Because his seat could be in jeopardy. It's pretty hard to tell still. We'll learn more in the coming races, but he really needs to pick up the pace really fast if he wants to hold on to his seat for more than three or four races. So now we had Saturday afternoon and the qualifying session, and as I said earlier, we had Liam Lawson down in P20 again. As I said, the car just looks impossibly unstable right now, and that's about all I have to say on it at this point. Clearly, Alpine weren't just suffering from traffic on Friday because both of their drivers are also out in Q1 after missing out on SQ2. So, both of their drivers are out in Q1 after being knocked out in SQ1 on Friday. I think they were just struggling with pace this weekend. It looks like a pretty solid car. We expected it to be probably the sixth fastest car on the grid, and it's just not looking like that right now. It's very, very strange to see where Gasly was unable to take an opportunity to score points in Australia, and now they just never seem to be on the pace throughout the entire weekend, and some misfortune happened in the end that I'll cover later. Not want to spoil too much for those of you who didn't actually watch the race. So, alongside Lawson, the two Alpines, Gabriel Bortoleto and Oliver Bearman were both out, which means that after the strange qualifying session before the sprint, both of the veterans for those teams managed to scrape their way into SQ2 this time. However, that was where the line would end, but not actually by much, as Ocon and Hülkenberg finished P11 and P12 in Q2. Pretty solid result for both of them. Meanwhile, Carlos Sainz finished behind both and was 2.5 tenths off of his teammate Alex Albon. That's pretty concerning given they're in the same car, and Albon ends up making it to Q3, Sainz eliminated by a pretty solid margin. It was very confusing to see as he ends up dead last in Q2 while Albon's in the top 10. It's strange to see. I think Sainz will be fine over time, but he's got to get adjusted pretty quickly or Albon's going to run away with this team. Alongside those three, the two Aston Martins were also eliminated, with Alonso just barely ahead of Stroll. It's surprising quick. I mean, I feel like we're not talking about that enough. He's looked very, very good, and this is one of my key takeaways from this weekend. Lance Stroll has looked very good, and I'm gonna provide a reason why I think he's performing so well later in the episode. I don't know what else to say, honestly. Props to him for finally figuring something out, I guess. So now we head to Q3, where Oscar Piastri takes pole. George Russell barely prevents a McLaren front row lockout as Lando Norris settles for P3, just ahead of Max Verstappen as the Ferraris crash right back down to earth after Hamilton wins the sprint by finishing P5 and P6 in Q3. Behind them, surprisingly, not Antonelli in the Mercedes, as he's beat out by Isaac Hadjar. What a session for Isaac Hadjar. P7. And he had a huge gap to Yuki Tsunoda. It was a half a second gap from Hadjar in seventh to Tsunoda in ninth. I mean, it was just an absolutely stunning lap. And yes, Yuki had some struggles in his Q3 laps. So I'm not going to put that too much on pure pace, considering his Q3 time is the slowest of the three times that he recorded in the sessions. But definitely calls some things into question. And how good is Hadjar qualifying? I mean, that was just an absolutely stunning lap. And as I said, Antonelli was just below him. I mean, he'll be fine. Like I said, he'll be fine. He's just got to figure it out probably sooner rather than later, but I don't think they expect him to be up there with Russell in his first season on the team. I think he's expected to compete in the points regularly, but I mean, obviously, I'm not within the Mercedes team, but I don't think they expect him to be competing with Russell already. I mean, he's 18 years old. The dude's like 5 months older than I am. So let's give him some slack right now. Now we head to Sunday and the Grand Prix. Norris got past George Russell off the line. Verstappen tumbles down the order. And these are both really reasonable explanations, as both actually got pretty solid starts. Russell was alongside Piastri at one point. Verstappen was alongside Norris. But they both fall down the order. Russell to P3, Verstappen all the way down to P6, and like I said, very logical conclusion here. Russell was way too far on the inside because Piastri squeezed him over there and had to brake very early and very hard to prevent going off the track. And Verstappen was too far on the outside, and that compromised his line through turn one and all the way into turn two, as both Ferraris squeak past him, but not without consequence, as Charles Leclerc ends up running into the back of Lewis Hamilton, suffering some front wing damage, but really bad. We'll talk about that in a bit later. Right now, I want to cover some of the other moves that happened at the start, with Ocon making a pretty solid getaway. He's up in the points from P11, and Antonelli and Tsunoda both jumping Hadjar down the order. Antonelli to P7, Tsunoda P8, Isaac Hadjar P9. A couple laps in, we see Fernando Alonso suffering a brake failure ahead of Pierre Gasly. He is forced to retire from the race. That is his second straight retirement, and you got a feel for him. This one wasn't his fault. I mean, was he gonna get in the points? Maybe. It's kind of hard to tell. And with some of the stuff that happened after the race concluded, he probably would have snuck his way in. But I mean, just a forgettable weekend for him. He's gonna want to go into the Japanese Grand Prix with a clean slate for sure. After Alonso retired, Piastri just sort of widened the gap out in front as the race entered the tire management phase. And specifically, Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton needed to do a better job of managing their tires, as both struggled heavily with tire blisters throughout their stint on the medium tires. Now we've hit the first pit phase of the race, and Yuki Tsunoda and George Russell go in pretty early, and both pull undercuts on the drivers in front of them. Russell is now splitting the two McLarens again, and his teammate, Kimi Antonelli, gets absolutely screwed as Tsunoda moves in front of him, and Ocon a couple laps later is able to get in front thanks to his cool tires. So while all that's going on, Alex Albon decided to hang out longer than anybody else and somehow led the race. I don't really know how this happened, but props to him. That had to feel pretty good. So now, once we're onto the hard tires, we're starting to see some pretty strange anomalies. First off, remember that wing damage that Charles Leclerc suffered early on? Yeah, he's now faster than Lewis Hamilton, and it's getting to a point where Hamilton elects that he needs to swap with Leclerc and let the faster car pass with front wing damage. I'm going to stop myself right there because I said I wasn't going to say too much against Ferrari, but man, they messed this season. After that Ferrari swap, nothing really happened. There's mostly a lot of discussions on what the strategy of the race is going to be. Is it going to be a one stop? Is it going to be a two stop? RB blinks first as Isaac Hadjar comes into the pits for his second stop of the race, and he is going to run some medium tires all the way to the end. Many teams eventually decide on a one stop, though. The only other team to join the Racing Bulls in that endeavor was Ferrari. Remember last week when we were talking about strategy? Remember the two teams that completely screwed their drivers by leaving them out too long on dry tires? Here we go again, folks. It looks like it's going to be another struggle for RB and Ferrari, thanks to terrible strategy decisions. Viva Italia, I guess? I don't really know what to say about that. So now, we're getting into the later laps in the race, and we're seeing some decent drama, which this race really didn't have much of it. As I said, it was pretty sleep-inducing for the most part, but it's decent drama late in the race. Verstappen comes alive to pass both Ferraris and take P4 in the race. Pretty solid race for him, considering he was struggling with tire degradation pretty heavily in both the sprint and early on in the Grand Prix. But once his car started to get a bit lighter on fuel, he started to really come alive, and it was a pretty impressive drive to get past both Ferraris in the later laps. Alongside that, we had Yuki Tsunoda's front wing just kind of giving up. Like, he just decided that didn't want to be on the car anymore, and I just feel so hard for Tsunoda. He's driving so well right now, and first, he gets screwed by strategy in Australia, then he gets screwed again by strategy in China, and honestly, there's a pretty easy joke to make there, but I'm gonna choose not to make that one. So now, with all that concluded, it's time to get back to the front of the field, where Oscar Piastri was completely safe up front for the majority of the race and ended up winning. Lando Norris coasts home for second place, despite critical brake issues late in the race. I'm honestly not sure what was going on there. A lot of miscommunication between him and his race engineer, Will Joseph. Like I said earlier, this just feels like a flashback to last year, but I digress. As George Russell picks up another podium, and again, did we see him once during the race outside of that undercut? That was kind of the only thing that happened. He fell behind Norris, undercut to get back ahead, and then fell behind again and just ran his own race in third. Pretty impressive to pick up the podium, but it's been a very strange start to the season for George Russell so far. So with the racing self-included, it's time to get on my key takeaways and hold up. Wait a minute, there's some drama to cover. Charles Leclerc, Pierre Gasly, and Lewis Hamilton all disqualified from the race. Leclerc and Gasly both underweight, and Hamilton had excessive plank wear, so he's also disqualified. This led to an insane final classification, with Esteban Ocon picking up P5 for Haas, Williams getting both drivers into the points, with Carlos Sainz squeaking out P10. And Lance Stroll getting points again. He's finished in the top 10 in all three sessions so far. What is going on? Take a breath. Time for the key takeaways. First key takeaway from this weekend is that Yuki Tsunoda's 2025 season might be dead before it even gets started. First off, gotta give props to Yuki. He's showing incredible pace for Racing Bulls, but strategy and unreliability are killing his chances of scoring points. The only points scored so far by him came in a sprint where strategy is virtually non-existent. And apparently, what I said last week about strategy doesn't apply to sprint races. And that's evident in the fact that Racing Bull scored points as well as Ferrari winning. Yeah, not really sure what else to say about that. So not only is Racing Bull presenting its own issue, but the Red Bull car is basically a hormonal teenager out there. The development of the car has prioritized a theoretically faster car, which is creating a looser rear end in the process. Very few drivers can handle that well. One of them is Max. The other one is not Liam Lawson. As much as I like Liam, as much as I think he's a talented driver, this is not the kind of car he should have been thrust into. However, Yuki would likely be just as bad as Liam has been if he was put in that second seat. Not many guys can handle that type of car, and that's okay. That doesn't mean they're not skilled drivers. It just means that's not their specific skill set. You know a driver that does have that specific skill set? Daniel Ricciardo? Anybody? The guy who succeeded primarily in cars that were early braking with a lot of oversteer, like the late 2010s Red Bulls or the 2019 and 2020 Renaults. That ring a bell for anybody? And I'm sure it's fine. It's not like they had Ricciardo in one of their cars ready to drive the second Red Bull at a moment's notice or anything. It's fine. Honestly, for Yuki, looking forward to the future, I'm not sure what opportunities are going to open up next year for him. His career could be heading on a downward spiral, with it having absolutely nothing to do with him. It's just such an unfortunate situation. The problem for Yuki is 2025 looks like it's already screwed, and now he's going to head into next year with barely any opportunities. Staying in the Red Bull organization is a death sentence. Aston is seeming less and less likely, especially with Stroll starting to perform, as I'll cover in a second, and the only other unconfirmed seats for 2026 are Mercedes and Alpine. Now, Alpine, you can make an argument that he could ever head over there, but let's be real, it's going to be Franco Colapinto for at least 1 year before he heads back over to Williams. So is that seat really open? Probably not. That leaves Mercedes, which would require Russell or Antonelli to leave. And there's no reason for either of them to leave because there's no other open seats unless you want Russell to move to Red Bull with Max. Basically, Yuki's probably not going to have a drive this year, and it's not going to have anything to do with his pace or anything about his skill. It's just going to be down to sheer, dumb, bad luck. It's so unfortunate to see a driver like that, who's clearly very skilled, just get absolutely screwed by the teams around him. And yeah, I probably shouldn't say too much before I start really crashing out against Racing Bulls. It's been so painful as a Yuki fan watching these first few races, seeing how much pace he has himself, and seeing how much his team is just throwing away that pace. Second key takeaway from this weekend is that the rookies all have insane potential. Don't get me wrong, they're all still very, very raw, and that's evident in their overtaking attempts. See, Kimi Antonelli's inability to clear Tsunoda in the sprint, Doohan locking up and hitting Bortoleto at the hairpin during the sprint, Bortoleto himself losing control of his Sauber while trying to go around the outside into turn 4. Oliver Bearman getting impatient, making a desperate dive at Lance Stroll, and ended up locking on and going straight on at the hairpin. But despite this rawness, they have all shown flashes of excellence, specifically over a single lap. Antonelli and Bearman have also made excellent comeback drives. Because of all that, I think the future is looking very bright for the sport. This generation is coming in to replace the guys that are starting to retire now. We've lost Kimi Räikkönen in 2021. We lost Sebastian Vettel in 2022. Sooner or later, we're going to lose Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton, and that's going to be the end of that generation. The only driver who's going to be left on the grid that drove for 2015 is going to be Nico Hülkenberg. And how much longer is Hülkenberg going to last in this seat? He's starting to get on in years too. This is really the last few drivers of this generation. That's where we're seeing some of these rookies that are already stepping up into those roles, and I am fully prepared to see some of these guys in top team seats if they're not already in one. The final key takeaway from this weekend is that this season is a test for Lance Stroll, and he is passing it with flying colors. First off, yes, Stroll has been terrible. His 2024 was terrible. His 2023 wasn't much better. But let's not forget the Stroll that drove for Williams and Racing Point. Was he extremely inconsistent? Yes. But he also had some pretty poor luck in both of those teams, and he also had a very, very high top end. He got a podium Baku 2017. He got pole position in Istanbul in 2020. He's clearly got talent. He just didn't seem to care over the last 2 years, especially last year when he was struggling for Aston. So, With Aston entering the World Endurance Championship, Stroll could have realistically been moved over to make a way for another driver. Think Yuki Tsunoda coming in with Honda, or even Verstappen making a shock switch from Red Bull to Aston Martin. However, Stroll is showing he's still got something left in him this season. He has been consistently near Alonso in qualifying. Yes, he's lost out to him in two of the three sessions, but he outqualified Alonso once by one point position, and he was outqualified twice by Alonso by one position both times. He's been right there within the tenth of a second of Alonso in all three qualifying sessions so far. He also survived a very tough Australian Grand Prix to score a great result while his teammate couldn't keep it out of the barriers. So I think Stroll is ultimately not that bad. And it pains me to say that because he was a guy that I really wanted out of F1 coming into the season. But, you know, if he's going to turn it around and go be a solid driver, more power to him. The reason I wanted him out, I can't speak for other people, but the reason that I wanted Stroll out of F1 is because he didn't seem like he had the talent to be there. If he's going to prove that he still has the talent to be there, by all means, go do it. And my opinion will change. I am flexible in that. I am willing to admit, if you're going to go be a good driver, you have earned your seat. Now, am I willing to make the conclusion that he has fixed himself, he is going to go be a good driver for the rest of the season after two races? Absolutely not. However, I do think it's something that I'm going to keep a close eye on, because if he's going to succeed, then I'm going to be way more fine with him staying in that seat in 2026, but he's got to keep doing, maybe not at this level. I don't think that we need to expect him to be at the level where he's scoring points or finishing the top 10 every single session like he has been. But if he's consistently placing the points, then yeah, I'm totally fine with him sticking around for 2026. But he's still got to prove to me that he can do it over a full season. So that's actually going to do it for this episode. For the race preview for the Japanese Grand Prix, I'm actually going to come out with a separate, much shorter episode for that next weekend, because there is a week break between these two races for them to get to the Suzuka circuit. So like I said, that is going to be it for this episode. Thanks for listening along with me as I talked about F1 cars for 30 minutes. God bless, and I'll see you guys next time.